You ready for some coffee, honey?
Absolutely.
I'll pour.
Great coffee. I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli.
And I'm Linda Martinelli.
And we are Talking
While Married.
Young lady, I'm all fired up. How about that Democratic presidential candidate debate in Las Vegas?
It was pretty sad, in my opinion.
Well, you know, we've looked here and there, you know, through a couple of the debates before, but this one we decided, because we had friends visiting, to sit down and watch the debate all together on the couch with some coffee. And I will tell you, I'm just invigorated because I think President Trump is going to mow down these people like one of those giant mowing machines that you see at the park.
Well, the thing that was, I mean, there's a number of things that stood out. First of all, it was so disorganized and it was a free-for-all. I just was amazed that nobody had control of that whole thing, that anybody could just say what they wanted to say, raise their hand, start speaking without being called on, and just go off on people.
So NBC were the sponsors of the debate, and I absolutely agree with you. I don't think they had control from the beginning. I didn't think the questions were good. As a matter of fact, I thought the questions were really lousy. They weren't really probative. And I thought initially they were pretty much designed to cause a fight right out of the box. And that's what they got between Elizabeth Warren and Mini Mike Bloomberg. I mean, right out of the box, she started throwing punches at Mini Mike. And he didn't know what the heck to do.
Well, I got to tell you that I am not a fan of Elizabeth Warren. I wouldn't want her politics, but I really enjoyed watching her because she just didn't mince her words, and I like that.
Well, she's an angry white woman, okay? Well, but I agree with you. She took what I thought were appropriate shots at Mike Bloomberg, who was totally unprepared for the entire evening. I don't know who the heck was coaching him, but that person is probably out on a freeway with a homeless sign right now.
Well, you know, the thing is, the other thing about her, about Elizabeth Warren, when the Hispanic broadcaster asked the question.
The female?
Yes.
From Telemundo.
Is that okay?
Right, she was from Telemundo.
Yeah, when she asked the question about Klobuchar not even knowing the name of the president of Mexico, right? I mean, I forget names all the time.
Me too.
That's not a big deal. What a stupid question to ask in a presidential debate. I want the big picture. I want to know what you're going to do for this country. And there was nothing in that entire debate that told me what anybody there was going to do for the country. They told me how bad the president was. Didn't say why. I still have no idea why, because I really like the president. They told me that they were going to basically raise our taxes and they were going to mess up our health care. But they didn't really say, there's no plan from anybody. I mean, Elizabeth Warren kept saying, I have a plan for that. I have a plan for this.
Well, let's
I have
hear it.
A plan.
And there's no follow-up question to say, well, tell us about your plan.
No, because you couldn't get a word in. Nobody could get a word in edgewise there. It was really a free-for-all, and everybody was, you know, jumping on each other there. And the other thing that I really noted was Bernie Sanders, I could not stand looking at him for 4 years with that angry face. I don't want to see an angry face who disavows everything that this country was built on.
Well, you know, it's interesting because you're the person that kind of came up with the idea, which I completely agree about, and we've had several discussions about it since, where you talk about how politicians are dysfunctional parents.
Yes.
And when they're dysfunctional, when they're angry, when they're, you know, spouting off, when they're doing these things, the children, who are the people, tend to pick that up. And it's interesting to note, because this has come out from all sorts of different media, both conservative and liberal news media, the Bernie Sanders people are angry people. And they will go on to Twitter, go on to Facebook, go on to LinkedIn, go on to Instagram, and do everything they can to destroy anybody, including Democrats, that disagree with Bernie Sanders. So I think he's the dysfunctional parent, and they're taking their cues from him. Yet he's in complete denial about him being angry and his people being angry.
Well, and he's a serious socialist.
I will tell you, I think he's more than a socialist.
I think he's
a communist.
Yeah.
I do. I don't know. What the heck's the difference between communism and socialism? It's both an ideology that seeks to, take away from people that are earning money and give it to people that aren't earning anything. Right?
Exactly.
And it's the redistribution of wealth.
Yes. And it also will take away the entire premise of what America was built on, which is allowing people to get better, to do whatever they can do in their life. Now, there's always going to be those people that don't want to do things and that they want to, be dependent on other people. That is never going to change. But they are not that way because America doesn't offer them opportunity. And I resent Bernie Sanders telling people all the time that we are not fair to our workers. Are you just kidding me? We are so much more fair to our workers here.
I pay a lot of attention to the rhetoric, to the language. And I know a lot about socialism. I know a lot about communism, having studied it for many years. And I will tell you that the rhetoric that comes out of Bernie Sanders' mouth is the rhetoric of communism and Marxist socialism. The workers, the workers, the workers. It's the worker class, you know. And he talks about the oligarchs, meaning the billionaires, right? So the oligarchs and the workers, the worker party. I feel like I'm in frickin' Russia in 1917, for Red October.
Elizabeth Warren is the same way. And I think Buttigieg has a lot of that within him, too. I think that, unfortunately, this is the most left-wing, progressive left group of candidates I've ever seen in my life. And it's very disconcerting because we have built in America, despite its hiccups and its, blemishes, right? We have built a country that has far surpassed any other civilized country on earth. And they want to tear it down and make it look like Russia, like Greece, like Venezuela,
like Cuba.
Even they said Denmark. Okay, right. Denmark is not a panacea. I'm sorry.
And by the way, and he's mentioned Finland too, with regards to their universal health care. Both of those countries, Finland went bankrupt.
Yes.
Okay, we talked about that just a couple of months ago. And Denmark is well on the way to bankruptcy. And you just can't do that. And what really bothered me about Bernie Sanders I think it was Pete Buttigieg that hit him up on that and talked about his universal health care plan. And he said, you're telling us it's going to cost $35 trillion. Please remember that a trillion is 1,000 billion and a billion is 1,000 million. So $35 billion over 10 years. Where are you going to get the economic resources? Where are you going to get the money to pay for this program? And Bernie says, and I think I'm pretty close to the quote, well, nobody really knows what it's going to cost, but, we're working on it. Okay, we're working on it. And what it reminded me, going back to the Obama days with Nancy Pelosi, we have to pass the bill before we can read it, right?
Yeah,
we got to pass
right.
the bill before we can read it.
Right.
I'm not going down that road again with Bernie Sanders and $35 trillion, healthcare system that is going to absolutely collapse on its face, pretty much the way Obamacare has collapsed on its face. Nobody's been helped by Obamacare. Who the heck is kidding who?
Yeah, this other thing that they said last night about adding 2 cents onto people over a certain amount of tax, and then they read off a litany of things that would pay for billions of dollars for this, billions of dollars for that. there is no way with the people that make over the amount that they stated, I don't remember what it was, but it was a lot of money, that a 2 cents tax over a certain amount is going to get all those things paid. There is just no way. There's not enough money. So that is a total ludicrous joke.
Well, you know, it's a canard, all right? And the reason why is because when they start talking like that, people tend to focus just on that one program, okay? So they start focusing, because that's the topic, right? They're talking about universal health care. But then you forget about the hundreds of billions of dollars that we spend on our military, on our national security, on our infrastructure, on all the other things that we spend money on.
They wouldn't give money.
Where is this money coming from?
Out of those things you just mentioned,
and then
for
look,
sure.
And aren't we something like $21 or $22 trillion in debt right now?
Yes.
All right? And even with President Trump, God bless him, we're not really knocking that debt down. We're still creating more debt. So we're talking about enslaving our grandchildren and our great-grandchildren to the state tax-wise for paying for all of the problems that we have created as adults with these Democratic and, in some part, Republican administrations. Well, this has got to stop.
The two things really stand out to me, and they're both kind of long things to talk about. But one is back to the health care, and that is that, you know, Bernie says that health care should be a human right. It's a right. It's not something that people should have to pay for. Well, I disagree totally that it's a right. It's not a right, because by making it a right,
then it becomes an entitlement. Once you make it a right, it's an entitlement.
More than that, who do you force to be a doctor to take care of people? Because doctors go into being doctors for a couple of reasons. Some go in because they just want to help people. Some go in because historically it's been very good economically to do that. It's no longer being the case as much as it used to be. Therefore, we are seeing less people go into medicine right now. And that's a problem. And the people that are going into medicine are not going into private practices as much as they're going into groups of doctors.
Concierge
no, not
health
concierge,
services?
No, just into medical groups.
Like clinics?
Like Kaiser,
okay.
Or like, yeah.
Oh, I see what you mean.
Those types of
sure.
things.
Sure,
because they cannot afford to pay the tax, and not
right.
not just the tax, they can't afford to pay the insurance, they can't afford the time and the employees it takes to fill out all the paperwork and all those things. So if healthcare becomes a right, how do you get enough healthcare providers in a non-capitalist society to provide for everybody?
So, Lynn, do you remember when we had the big brouhaha about the HMOs and the first group of doctors fled the United States and they went to other countries to practice medicine? You know, we see that in our part-time residence down in Puerto Vallarta, Mexico, where we have a lot. By the way, the medical care is excellent there. There's American hospitals, and you have American doctors that fled the HMOs, remember? And they went down to countries like Mexico, and they went to other countries to practice medicine. I firmly agree with you, and I think that if Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren and Pete Buttigieg and all these socialists that are screaming for universal health care, if we go in that direction, I think you're going to see a ton of doctors leaving the United States and going off on their own and becoming doctors in other places. The other thing I think we're going to see is that these doctors are not going to go into those as much those Kaisers and, you know, medical groups like that. But I see the future as being concierge service. Don't you?
Well,
do you agree?
They may not even allow that under their program. I don't know. But the thing is, the big thing to me, Ron, is you cannot force somebody to become a doctor. And is that the next step in socialism? It certainly is in communism.
Yeah.
where you dictate what somebody's going to do for a living. And what I see is our healthcare not being better for everybody, but seriously going to hell in a handbasket, because you're not going to have enough people to service everybody. And if it's free, you're going to have, as you always do, lots and lots of people taking advantage of the system. And then you're going to have to do things like refuse to cover certain things. So if you're over this age, they're not going to cover you if you have cancer or heart failure or whatever. No, that is the road that they're taking us down. And their fairy tale that they're trying to paint this as for everybody as all rainbows is not so.
Okay, two things I want to bring up, and I'm glad you're going down this road, because if you remember, during the debate, Bernie Sanders was talking, you know, he mentioned countries, right? He mentioned Finland,
Denmark, mm-hmm.
but he also mentioned Canada. Do you remember when he mentioned
yes.
Canada? And you and I have met quite a few Canadians during our travels. We even did a talking while married on the Rhine River last year, where we were talking to some Canadians about their health care, and they hated it. And they were talking about how many Canadians go across the border to the United States. And of course, we, living part-time in Mexico, we see a ton of Canadians that have become expats of Canada and now live in Mexico full-time because they want the medical services in Mexico, which are far better than the medical services in Canada. You don't see people in the United States crossing the border to go up to Canada to get better medical care.
Well, and here's the point, is that when I need medical care, I want my medical care, and I want it now. So, case in point, as you and I are sitting here talking, I hurt my knee weeks ago. I still have not been able to see a doctor for my knee. And finally, you know, I will get to see one in a week or so, but I shouldn't have had to wait this amount of time, because doctors are just too busy. There's not enough of them, and they're backlogged. And just think of universal health care, where doctors are now making a pittance for all of the work and time and sweat and tears that they put into being doctors.
You know, that's a great thing that you mentioned. And by the way, in case I forget, I want to talk about senior citizens, because Bernie brought up senior citizens. But one of the things that I want to talk about, and maybe we'll talk about it in a minute, is all about how little doctors really make that work in hospitals.
Spreading the out loud truth from sea to shining sea. AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world. To unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. We are the vision of the voices. Welcome to the new era in communications. America Out Loud Talk Radio.
This is Dr. Ron Martinelli, forensic criminologist and host of A Thread of Evidence on America Out Loud. If you'd like to find out what forensic criminologists really do in the field, and you're tired of the false narratives about law enforcement and want to unpack the cases that I've worked throughout the nation, then please pick up a copy of my new book, The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police, on sale right now at Amazon.com. That's The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police at Amazon.com.
Well, staying on track with the issues of doctors, and I don't think people know what has happened to physicians in the United States. Those doctors that are not in private practice, but those doctors, well, I think we can even talk about doctors in private practice, not making anywheres towards the type of money that people think that doctors make.
Well, they used to, and then now they've put all these regulations, and they've put all this paperwork
and intermediaries.
Yeah, and then of course, you know, with the Medicare system, They are, get paid so little for taking care of people on Medicare that doctors will put a limit on the people that they would have to take for Medicare.
And some people, some doctors aren't even accepting Medicare patients, and we've seen that out here in Texas.
Right. Well, they have to accept the Medicare patient if they were an existing patient before they went on Medicare.
I understand that.
Yeah, but they won't accept new patients.
Correct.
So if you move from one place to another, then that makes it a problem. But yeah, they've done, you know, and then you also have all the lawyers that get involved, and doctors get sued, and so therefore they have to spend exorbitant amounts on insurance. So all these things take a toll on, really, on our health care. And what Obamacare did, I mean, I just feel that it really, really damaged our health care in this country as it stood, which already I felt was damaged by going in the direction that they did with all of these intermediaries and PPOs and things like that in between the patient and the doctor.
Right. There's just too many levels of bureaucracy.
Yes.
And intermediaries between the patient and the doctor. And what's happening, at least what I see, is you get people in their late 20s and, you know, maybe 30 years old, and they know nothing about medicine, right? They know nothing about patients. They know nothing about medical care. And they are putting the blocks in stopping and not approving some of these medical procedures that doctors believe that patients need to have.
Yes. Yeah, there's way too much red tape anymore. Instead of just going to your doctor and getting taken care of, you really have to go through just a lot of hoops. And the thing is, if you have something like a lump in your breast and you want it to be taken care of, you're panicked and you want to see somebody right away, I mean, it's just virtually impossible to you have to get permissions and you have to get approvals. And I mean, this is just baloney. This is our lives that they're playing with. And this is what that group of Democrats standing on the stage are playing with, American lives. And they want to have government be your daddy,
right,
and control everything that happens to us. That's not how it should be. Our life should be that we control our life, that we do the best that we can. Government is here to support and enhance us. It is not here to control us. I am not here to support and enhance my government. It should be the reverse, because we are the American people. We are allowing ourselves to be swayed by an argument that sees government as being a nanny state, and that is a serious, serious problem.
Well, you know, I believe that I think Teddy Roosevelt said it first, and Ronald Reagan said it, you know, next, and Donald Trump is saying it now. And that is, look, the government is, you know, the funny, you know, we joke about it all the time. What are the 11 worst words that you ever want to hear?
Yeah.
I'm from the government, and I'm here to help.
Right, exactly.
These jokes are born out of truism.
Yes.
Right? And you and I have seen that. And the more people from government that gets involved, the worse the plight of the American citizen is. And you and I have both worked with governments. I work with governments day in and day out, various governments, municipal, state, federal governments, and there's not a single one of them that are successful.
Well, and I, in my business, for the most part, don't work with governments because it's just so convoluted. And here's just an aside of a quick case in point. I got a bid from a government office in the other day, and I look at it, and it is this huge paperwork mass that every government bid is, that you have to declare that you're not, you know, doing this and doing that, and you're environmentally correct, you're not buying from Middle Eastern countries, whatever it is. It's a bunch of gobbledygook that they put out, okay, that everybody has to fill out. So you have to fill out all these papers, and you have to provide all this information. The bid was for two shirts.
Oh, I know you told me this.
Two shirts. Are you kidding me? Do you know how much money?
Just give them the money. Yeah. Just leave me alone. Here's $50. Just leave me alone.
Do you know how much money the government wasted
on that paper?
All of that paperwork, yes. With all of the time that it took the employee to do that and send it out and then recap the bids. Are you kidding me? I mean, I just deleted it because I don't have that kind of time. I don't get paid to do that. I would be losing money just to respond to that bid. So that's how ludicrous it is. Think about that over the entire medical healthcare system for the entire country. What a nightmare. I mean, people seem to think that they're going to get something for free, and that's all well and good, and they are going to be so regretful. If they open this can of worms, it is going to just, they're going to eat you.
No, you're 100% right. You know, one of the scary things that I heard Bernie Sanders say during this debate was they were talking about, it wasn't about this. It was a separate interview leading up to the debate, and they were talking about senior citizens. And he said, you know, if you're like 95 years old and you need a procedure, we shouldn't have to give you that procedure because you're 95 years old. I would just wish that person to have a good life at the end and then just move on.
Wait, did Bernie say that or did Bloomberg say that? Because I thought Bloomberg said that.
Oh, okay, well then, you know what? Maybe I'll back away, but
yeah.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. We have a Democratic candidate for president of the United States making comments like that. And you know what? I'm gonna surrender. I think you're right. I think it was Bloomberg that said that. And I'm looking at that. I'm going, God, that's exactly what's happening in Canada. You know, and I had a friend that she's retired now, and she was a nurse in Canada, in Alberta. And she was talking about they have only X amount of dialysis machines.
Oh, yeah, I've heard that.
Right? And so people get on the list for dialysis. You know, they have it every week, right? I believe, okay? And they get on these lists for dialysis, but they're not putting the older people, like if you're over 80 years old, at least what she was saying, at least in Alberta, and I talked with her a few years ago, maybe it's changed, maybe it's gotten worse. But she said, yeah, you know, if you're like 80 years old, forget it, because you're not looked at by the state as being productive.
I think the main thing to me about the debate was I was really embarrassed for the whole Democratic Party in the direction they've gone, that is the best that they have to offer, and those are the guys still standing. There was not a one of them in there that I think holds a candle to President Trump. And, you know, I mean, Joe Biden, I don't know how you felt about him. I felt that he looked old and I don't know what the right word is. I want to say insecure in what he was saying. He really had to think about it. And a lot of what he said in my mind was, well, I did this 30 years ago and I did this then and I did this then. And, you know, but there was nothing about what he would do now.
You touched on a couple of things, and for me, and I was actually a little bit, I've joked before about Biden having foot and mouth disease, but I took a really hard look at Joe Biden during the debate. I saw him to be, like you did, an old man. Now, Bernie Sanders is 78 years old. Joe, I think, is 79 years old, but Bernie Sanders, even after having a heart attack, had 10 times the energy that Sleepy Joe had, okay? His skin, Joe's skin, looked translucent. He stumbled around.
Yeah, stumbled around a lot.
It looked like he couldn't put his thoughts together.
Yes.
I agree with you that everything he came out with, he had done years and years ago, and he didn't have a policy. He didn't have a program. He didn't have a direction. And I think he was fighting to remain engaged, but I can't help but think that in his own mind, he's saying to himself, what the hell am I doing here? President Obama, who I worked for 8 years, is not even supporting me as President of the United States. And by the way, this is Joe Biden's third time running for office for President of the United States.
Well, didn't we just see a commercial with Bloomberg and Obama?
Oh, I thought that was masterful.
Yeah, he put that right on the debate.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, he's using his billions and billions of dollars to buy ads all over the place.
So far, he spent about, as of, you know, this debate, they said that he had spent $463 million. And they said when the checks are all cashed, it could be $500 million just on TV ads. That's it. But don't forget, he's hiring thousands of people to go door to door, to knock on doors, and to generate interest in his candidacy.
Well, yeah. I mean, he's definitely out there to buy the election. But if you just looked at his performance in that debate, it was, I mean, it was not stellar. It was rather embarrassing. And, you know, he's another one of those guys that are kind of out of touch with really what people are in this country. Although I will say that he's a little bit more in touch than everybody else on that stage. But still, he is not presidential material in my mind. And, you know, something that came to my mind, Ron, while we were watching him, and he's got this huge newspaper and...
News organization, yeah, Bloomberg News.
Yeah, the whole big Bloomberg...
International.
Okay, so now you're going to be president and you're going to have Bloomberg News, what, doing your bidding everywhere? I mean, I don't understand how that would even work.
Well, here's what's interesting, and I know the media is giving Bloomberg a lot of pushback on this because he owns one of the major news organizations in the world. It's international. Bloomberg News is international. And he, by policy, by edict, has forbidden all of his reporters, and you know there are thousands of them, he's forbidden all of his reporters to report on him or any of the Democratic candidates. But it's free range against Donald Trump. So do you see the conflict of interest there?
Absolutely. It's a manipulation of the public. It's not news. It's a manipulation because news is supposed to be unbiased. It's supposed to be just what it is. And that's not what he's doing. This is so patently unfair that people have to see what's going on here. And just that people should resent that they're being manipulated in this way by this guy's money and his thirst for power. His hatred for Donald Trump is really taking over his whole mind and thoughts right now. He wants to beat Donald Trump, and that's all it is.
And the guy is worth $60 billion. And so if he just put in $5 billion, okay, so he's only spent... Half a billion,
right.
Okay, and we've got how many months till November? What are we here in?
I don't know, six months. Yeah.
So if he just spent $500 million every single month, okay, so he spent what two? He's been in it for 2 months now, a little under 2 months, and he spent $500 million. If he spent, well, he could spend $1 billion every single month if he really wanted to.
Sure, and I don't think he's even touched the surface of what he's going to spend. I think he's definitely going to try to buy this election in America, and people just have to be smarter than this because this is a guy that has nothing to offer America. He didn't do a good job as mayor in New York, so
right.
Why would we want him to be president of the United States?
You know, that's a good point. So let me ask you to speculate. How much do you think Bloomberg wants to win the election to become president of the United States, and keeping in mind his hatred for Trump and everything like that? And the reason I'm asking you this question, and I think it's a thought-provoking question, I hope you see it as that, I think where I'm going is, Do you see that if he does bad in a couple more of these debates, or you know, doing these caucuses and you know the primaries, if he loses the next couple, do you think he's going to pull out? Do you think he's going to quit and then end up supporting somebody else?
I don't think he's going to lose because I think the big places like California and New York are going to be in his corner, and I think he's going to go all the way. I think he's going to be the nominee. That's my opinion.
You think he's going to be the nominee?
I do.
Wow. Okay, that's interesting. I think Bernie Sanders is going to be the nominee.
Well, I don't disagree with you there either. It's between those two for sure. But the reason I think that Bloomberg will is because he has so much more money and because he has the media network. And I think that if Bloomberg performs okay in upcoming both in
the caucuses,
elections, primaries,
and, right.
But also in debates, because there's some more debates coming up pretty quickly.
Right.
If he continues to perform badly, he's going to go down. But if he performs well, then I think he's going to take it over. I do.
Next question about Bloomberg. Do you think he's coachable? Because one of our colleagues, who I respect, a historian on America Out Loud, just wrote an article about this
well,
whole
George,
thing.
And, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. George McClellan.
Yes.
And George said, and I love the article. It was a great article. He said it was the confluence of a collision between the Hindenburg and the Titanic. That's how bad it was. Okay, so do you think he stays in?
Who?
Bloomberg. You're thinking he's going all the way to the end. That's your deal.
I think he stays in.
He's going all the way to the end.
Yeah, but it could be that something happens. You know, we need to see how much damage these other candidates can do to Bloomberg and get people thinking. Because if they really think, honestly, Ron, I think every choice standing on that stage is a bad one. So which one are you going to pick out of those? Because in my mind, they're all bad.
Well, we'll just have to see. And I tell you what, it's going to be pretty darn exciting leading up to Trump.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
It's your news and entertainment network. News blogs, informative podcasts, entertaining videos, or listen to 24/7 talk radio. On our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. We the People, AmericaOutLoud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
I think that if people are in a state, let's take like California, where they are totally Democrat and that's all that's going to win, and they know that that's the fact, even though that there's a Republican running, but they know that they don't have a chance, take your money and donate it to any conservative candidate in Texas. Why do I say that?
Well, because we had a wonderful reception tonight with Governor Greg Abbott, who we just absolutely love and tremendously support. We actually were a couple of several couples that co-hosted him, and he gave us some really, really interesting, thought-provoking, and even some scary news about Beto O'Rourke's organization that's called Flip the Texas Legislature. And I think that's what you're referring to, yes?
Well, what I'm saying is conservatives all over the country, because we are a whole country, we are the 50 states, but we are an entire country. And as Texas goes, so goes the rest of the country. And that is why the Democrats are trying so very hard to turn Texas blue. And the thing is that if you're in a place where your vote matters and your donations matter, I would absolutely do what you need to do there. But if you're in a place where you're in a completely Democratic area and your vote and donation are not going to really mean a hill of beans, it will mean a lot for the entire country, because if they manage to flip Texas to blue, the entire country is really lost, because the
amount of electoral college votes we have.
Exactly. The electoral college votes, along with California and New York, that nobody could overcome that. So it's really, really critical for the entire country to understand how important it is to keep Texas red. And I'm not saying that as a Texan. I'm a fairly new Texan, right? I was a Californian my whole life. I knew that my vote meant nothing there, and it was very disheartening for me. But if I could make a difference somewhere, then, and I knew that I could, I would have done that. So why I say that now.
Wow, what an interesting thing to bring up. I mean, you just came at me at left field there, and I didn't anticipate that you were going to say that. But upon reflection, it really makes a lot of sense. Okay, because you're right, and that's what Governor Abbott told us this evening, and that is, look, there is a huge, a lot of money being poured in.
There's George Soros money.
Oh yeah, through Beto O'Rourke's organization, and of course, you know, everybody knows, or they should know, that George Soros is a person into destabilizing things, right? Destabilizing, and so he's pouring millions of dollars into these sort of underground operations, and this one actually is an overt organization championed by Beto O'Rourke,
yes,
right, called Flip the Texas Legislature, and we have to watch out about that. But you know what I thought was really cool? There were so many things that I want to talk about, because I got so excited about this governor that you and I and Texans dearly love, Greg Abbott. But what he said was that people that had moved from California, like us, escapees, into Texas, 57% of those people voted against Beto O'Rourke in the last election and voted for Ted Cruz. Now, and I'm not a huge fan of Ted Cruz. I truly wish that we had somebody other than Ted Cruz who was a conservative Republican, but it is what it is, and I would obviously much rather have a conservative Republican in office than someone like, you know, Beto O'Rourke or of his ilk.
Right. And, you know, a lot of the people, it's interesting because statistics even do say that people that are in Texas that do come in as Democrats will vote Democrat in their first election and tend to vote Republican after that. Here's what's happening, though. We have a couple of things with money coming in from outside of Texas.
Yes.
So big money.
A lot of money.
Big money pouring in to turn the state blue. That is the big thing. So what we need is big money pouring in to keep it red. I mean, we in Texas are doing the best that we can do. We're donating as much as we can donate, but we can't compete with the money that's coming in from the billionaires like Soros. And we need help from other people in other areas in the country. So that's why I say that. The other thing that Governor Abbott did, and I agree with you, we just think the world of him and how he runs this state and what he's done with this state. All of the accomplishments and all of the things that Texas is first in.
Yeah, and I want to talk about that.
Yeah.
But you know, let me go back, because you know, people that know me, you know, and you, common sense conservatives, they'd say, well, geez, you know, Dr. Ron, right? You kind of slammed Ted Cruz a little bit. And I mean, truth be told, you and I have supported Ted Cruz in every election that he is running, with the exception of the presidency when he ran for president of the United States. But I think, and Ted needs to know this, he sort of lost his way over there in Washington, and the feeling is he's kind of forgotten about Texans. And I think you'll agree with me on this. If it hadn't been for Governor Abbott and the tremendous assistance that Governor Abbott lent the Cruz campaign, we'd probably have Beto O'Rourke right now, because Beto O'Rourke scared the bejesus out of everybody because he came within about 3 points of Ted Cruz. And to me, Governor Abbott had everything, and his organization, which is just phenomenal, right, had everything to do, in my personal opinion, of saving Ted Cruz.
Yeah, and I don't know if you remember some of the statistics he gave about Texas. I don't remember.
You want me to tell you?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah,
please.
I think people would be interested to note, and Governor Abbott, he gave a tremendous talk this evening.
Yes, he did.
I love this guy. I mean, the guy is so darn smart. Let me just talk about him for a minute and what resonates with me about Greg Abbott. He's a politician, but he's not. Okay, he talks to the common man. The guy is so darn smart. Texas is this huge, I mean, it's a country of its own, and we're going to talk about that. And there are so many things going on in Texas, and Greg Abbott knows something about every single thing that is going on in Texas.
And he can talk intelligently about it, and he doesn't talk politics speak and gobbledygook.
Thank you.
Over
Thank
people's
you.
Head.
He
talks.
No notes.
No.
Right off the top of his head.
Yes.
He knows this stuff.
Yes.
And
he's
so
passionate about it.
Oh, he is.
He's passionate about Texas. And you know what? Texas is passionate about him.
You know, you cannot go to a speech or a talk. This was a talk, you know, as far as I'm concerned. You know, it was sort of an intimate gathering.
It was a reception.
Of friends,
yeah,
and supporters. Mm-hmm. There wasn't a lot of people there because it was by invitation. And he gave, when this man talks, my ears are perked. I'm on every single word that this guy says. And so here's some of the things that he said. If Texas was its own country, we would have the eighth largest economy in the world. The eighth largest economy. We're almost at like $2 trillion.
Well, and our economy in Texas is bigger than Russia's, Canada's. Who else did he mention?
Russia, Canada, and Australia.
Australia.
Okay. That's a pretty big economy.
Yes.
And so, and of course, Texas is a huge area because we're learning about it, right? We're driving all over Texas.
Yes.
It's huge. And, you know, speaking about driving all over Texas, I don't even want to begin to compare ourselves with Greg Abbott, because I was listening to him, and I was also listening to one of his aides talk. We struck up a conversation, and he is doing 3 cities a day all over Texas. He's bouncing all over the state of Texas. He's doing 3 cities a day to warn people about the potential for Texas turning purple, or God forbid, turning blue, with this whole Beto O'Rourke flipping the Texas legislature. So here is a man, like you said, Linda, who is extremely passionate about the Republic of Texas, about Texans, and you just can't help but love a guy like that.
Yeah, he's not, he is a politician, but like you say, he's not. He's He's a man with a passion about America and about the state of Texas. And I'm right there with him. I have the utmost respect for him. We've been to three events with him, and I have enjoyed each and every one. So, and I would continue to support his agenda in the state, because it's really just quite amazing. And having lived in California, it is so refreshing, so totally refreshing to come to a state like Texas and be away from a governor like Gavin Newsom or Jerry Brown.
Or the California legislature, my gosh, are train wrecks.
Yeah, it is. And that actually is the reason that we left. So this is very refreshing. And, I just admire him a lot and would do anything I could to support him in his support of all of the conservatives in Texas.
And he does. And he goes around and does support people running for the legislature. I mean, look at, compare and contrast Calisuela with Texas. You know, we're paying, almost $5 a gallon for gas during some seasons. And we go down, and I think last week, I think I paid $1.91 for gas. And, look at the very, very low unemployment. All our kids are grown and everything, but Texas is number 4 out of the 50 states in high school graduations. Where we live in the Texas Hill Country, our area has, I believe, the 3rd best school district in the United States, which is one of the reasons that people are moving, young people with kids are moving into our area. And of course, our area is starting to blossom and to grow. And they're just, the roads here, are beautiful, beautiful roadways. And you can see that when we go through the beautiful, and they're building freeways, they are just expanding, and the infrastructure, the Texas roadway infrastructure, tremendously. You go to Austin, they're building freeways. You go to Dallas, they're building freeways.
Well, Governor made a commitment. Governor Abbott made a commitment that he talked to us about a few months ago with the infrastructure and the roadways, and that they are being absolutely taken care of.
Yeah, and so, you just got to love that. And then conversely, you drive out of Texas and you're in New Mexico, and the roads are good in New Mexico, and you drive from New Mexico and you go to Arizona, and the roads are good in Arizona, and the minute you cross the Colorado River into, and you see that Welcome to Calisuela sign, then the roads start going all to hell in a handbasket, right?
Yep, that's true, because they keep diverting the people's money to other things.
Right.
The real story is that the economy in Texas is amazing. The educational system is amazing. And we've talked before that Governor Abbott just saw to it that, teachers get paid more money and they get paid more on their performance, and the performance of the kids that they teach, so that what they do really matters, and they get rewarded for that.
That's right. And Governor Abbott signed into law with the legislature a reduction in our property taxes. I think he said it was about 7%. So where everybody else's property taxes are going up, Texicans, our property taxes are going down. And then another thing that people may not know about Texas is that Texas takes care of veterans. So we have a lot of veterans here in Texas. Of course, we got a lot of military bases. We have a lot of retired veterans here.
They were named the number one best place for veterans to
live. And I'll tell you what, they bend over backwards for veterans here. So that's a real demonstration of thanking veterans for their service.
Yep. Yeah, there's so many reasons to love Texas, but one of the big reasons for all conservatives in the country, regardless of what state they live in, to love Texas is because without Texas being red, the entire country is going to go in a different direction, and that's a very, very big deal. So people across the country that can possibly donate to anybody conservative in Texas will only help us to keep the state red, and that way we can have, the great thing for the country of having a conservative president.
Right. And you and I do, you know, because we're so involved with the first responder community, law enforcement, fire science, fire service, and those people that are not happy in the first responder community in California and are conservative, you and I do our very best to recruit people to come in to the state of Texas to live. But we want conservatives here. I don't know why you would leave a liberal state like California that has just really become a cesspool, which is so unfortunate, and a dangerous place to live, by the way. And why would you bring that liberal attitude and voting mentality and bring that to Texas and want to create what you just escaped from, you know, in Texas?
And Governor Abbott will never allow the state of Texas to be a sanctuary state under his watch. So I respect that because I saw what it did to California, and, you know, it just...
And that's one of the many reasons why we're here.
Yep, that's true. One more good thing about Governor Abbott is he's not putting up with the homeless situation, people living all over the streets as they are in Austin, and he's doing something about that. But I would like to say one thing to Governor Abbott, which is, I still don't have my Chick-fil-A in the San Antonio airport.
But,
and I know he fought hard for it.
But you know what? When we had a lunch with him in San Antonio a few months ago, he brought that up. And they are doing everything they can to try to, you know, fight that whole anti-Chick-fil-A thing, okay? But here again, this is a guy that's a populist governor. He's speaking for the people. And Governor Abbott, we really need another restaurant in that San Antonio
and
airport.
Chick-fil-A fits the bill.
That's exactly right. All right, you ready?
Ready.
Kick it in.